Onward, Christian soldiers, marching as to war. With the cross of Jesus going on before. Christ the royal master leads against the foe. Forward into battle, see his banner go.
Shalom aleichem to all my pure-blooded white Christian Israelite brothers and sisters out there. The show is Word for Word. I'm Pastor Steve, and this is my 156th Word for Word show. All right. And this show is for Tuesday, the 17th of January, 2017. And we're going to finish up the book of 2 Kings today with chapter 24 and 25, and then I'll talk about Isaiah, which we're going to get into tomorrow on the 18th. Pardon me just a second. Yep, it's in the wee hours of the morning, and I had to clear the pipes a little bit. Let me get a drink of water here. Isaiah is going to be a long, involved run. It's a very big book, and lots of chapters, lots of commentary. I'm not going to rush through it. So we'll just take it one day at a time as we can. Yes. And Let's get started on chapter 24 of the second book of Kings. This is the story of the dispersion of Israel into Babel, the Babylonian captivity. Yehuda and what was left of the tribes of Israel, and the destruction of the temple. Yahweh had had enough, and it's a great tragedy, but buildings are only things and stuff. Israel had brought them selves to this point. The 10 northern tribes were in captivity in Assyria, and here comes the Babylonians, and they're gonna do a number on Yehuda and Benjamin. So verse 1 of chapter 24. In his days, Nebuchadnezzar, they call him Nebuchadnezzar in the King James. It's Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar. 5019. King of Babel. They call it, Babylon, but that's not scriptural. King of Babel came up. Jehoiakim became his servant for 3 years. He's the king of Yehuda. Then turned he and rebelled against him. Now, verse 1, you can reference Jeremiah 25, verses 1 through 38. And the book of Daniel, chapter 1. Verses 1 and 2. Verse 2. And sent Yahweh against him raiding bands, 1416, of the Kasdim, 3778. They're called Chaldees in the King King James Bible, and hence the Chaldean language, similar in many respects to Hebrew. And raiding bands of Aram, that would now be Syria, but the racial demographics were different back then. They're Arameans. And raiding bands of Moab, and raiding bands of the children of Ammon, the Ammonites, and sent them against Yehuda to destroy it, according to the word of Yahweh, which spoke he by his servant the prophets. This is going to be the end of the great Israel, the great tribes. The last two tribes are going to go into captivity eventually here. Verse 3, surely at the commandment of Yahweh this came to be upon Yehuda, to remove them from his sight for the sins of Manasseh according to all he did, and also for the innocent blood he shed, for filled he Jerusalem with innocent blood, which would not pardon Yahweh. He would not pardon that sin. That was the straw that broke the camel's back. That's it. Verse 5. Now the rest of the affairs of Jehoiakim and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the words of the days of the kings of Yehuda? That's the book of Chronicles. Verse 6. So Jehoiakim slept with his ancestors, and Jehoiakim, different spelling, 3078, his son reigned in his place. Verse 7. And the king of Mitzrayim came not again anymore from his land, for the king of Babel had taken from the wadi of Mitzrayim unto the river Parath, that's the Euphrates, all that belonged to the king of Mitzrayim. The Babylonians conquered the whole territory and took it away from Egypt. Verse 8. 18 years of age was Jehoiakim when began he to reign. Now, note in 2 Chronicles 36:9, it has 8 years of age. There is a discrepancy between the two. And reigned he in Jerusalem 3 months, and his mother's name was Nehushta, 5179, daughter of Elnathan, 494, from Jerusalem. Verse 9. And acted he evilly in the sight of Yahweh according to all that his father had done. Verse 10. At that time the servants of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babel, came up against Jerusalem, and the city came under siege. Verse 11. And Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babel, came up against the city, and his servants lay siege to it. They duplicated that almost identically, and they do that a lot in Hebrew. So it is not an error. Verse 12, and Jehoiakim, king of Yehuda, went forth to the king of Babel, he, his mother, his servants, his commanders, and his officers, and the king of Babel took him away in the 8th year of his reign. Now, verse 12, you can reference Jeremiah 22, 24 through 30, 24, 1 through 10, and 29, 1 and 2. In other words, he surrendered himself. Verse 13, and went forth from there all treasures of the house of Yahweh, and the treasures of the king's house, and he cut in pieces all the vessels of gold which had made King Shlomo in the temple of Yahweh, as had said Yahweh. Destroyed it all. Verse 13, you can reference 2 Kings 20, verse 17. 2 Chronicles 36, verse 10. And Isaiah 39, verse 6. Pardon me, I got to clear the pipes again. There we go. Get a drink of water and lubricate things a little. Verse 14. And carried he into exile all of Jerusalem, and all the commanders, and all the mighty men of valor, 10,000 exiles, and all the craftsmen and smiths. None remained except the poor of the people of the land. The people that had nothing, were diseased, were lame, blind, couldn't support themselves, had no talent. He left them. Verse 15. And carried he into exile Jehoiakim to Babel, and the king's mother, and the king's wives, and his officers, and the leaders, 352, of the land, went into exile from Jerusalem to Babel. In verse 15, you can reference Ezekiel chapter 17, verse 12. Verse 16, and all the men of valor, 7,000, those are the warriors, and craftsmen and smiths 1,000, all strong and able for war, those the king of Babel brought captive to Babel. Verse 17, and made the king of Babel Mattaniah, 4983, his uncle, to reign as king in his place, and changed his name to Zedekiyahu. That would be Zedekiah and Mattaniah, okay, in the King James. Zedekiyahu is 6667. In verse 17, you can reference Jeremiah 37, verse 1, and Ezekiel 17, verse 13. See, all these prophets, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, all these were prophets in those days. There were a bunch of them all of a sudden, and they all wrote about all of this. So the rest of the prophets, when we get into them, you're going to hear some familiar stuff that goes back all the way to 2 Kings here. The last days when they were oppressed and under siege, and starving, and took captive, and all of that. Verse 18, 21 years of age was Zedekiyahu. That means Yahweh is righteousness, the righteousness of Yah. Okay. When began he to reign, and reigned he 11 years in Jerusalem. He was the uncle of the real king. And his mother's name was Kamutal, daughter of Yirmiyahu of Libna. And verse 18, you can reference Jeremiah 27, verses 1 through 22, and 28, verses 1 through 17. So it didn't do a bit of good. Verse 19, and acted he evilly in the sight of Yahweh according to all that Jehoiakim had done. Didn't do any good. Verse 20, because through the anger of Yahweh it came to be in Jerusalem and Yehuda until he had cast they out from his presence that rebelled Zedekiah against the king of Babel. And this is going to be the end right here. This is chapter 25 starting. Verse 1. And it came to be in the ninth year of his reign, in the tenth month, in the tenth of the month, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babel, came, he and all his army against Jerusalem and encamped against it, and built they siege works against it all around. And verse 25:1, you can reference Jeremiah 21:1-10, 34:1-5, and Ezekiel 24:2. Verse 2, and came the city under siege until the 11th year of Zedekiah. That's 2 years. Verse 3, and on the ninth day of the month, the famine prevailed in the city, and there was no food for the people of the land. And verse 3, you can reference Jeremiah 52:6, and Zechariah chapter 8, verse 19. All these prophets wrote about all of this. There's a bunch of writings about this by the prophets. Verse 4. And the city was broken open, and all the men of war fled by night by the way of the gate between two walls, which is by the king's garden. Now the Kastim, that's the Chaldeans, were against the city all around, and the king went the way toward the plain, 61:60. Well, there weren't very many men of war left, because they had taken most of the fit men away. Verse 5, and the army of the Kasti, that's the Chaldeans again, pursued after the king and overtook him in the plains of Jericho, and all his army scattered from by him. Verse 6, so they captured the king and brought him up to the king of Babel to Riblah, and they pronounced judgment upon him. Now this is the Babylonians' justice here. This is 25:7. You can reference Jeremiah 39:7. And 52:11, and Ezekiel 12:13. Verse 7, and slew they the sons of Zedekiah before his eyes. In other words, killed his sons right in front of him. And then put out the eyes of Zedekiah and bound him with fetters of bronze, and carried him to Babel. Verse 8. And in the fifth month, on the seventh of the month, which was the 19th year of King Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babel, came Nebuzaradan, 5018, captain of the guard, a servant of the king of Babel, into Jerusalem. Here it comes. Verse 9. You can reference verse 9, 1 Kings 9, verse 8, and 2 Chronicles 36:19. And burned he the house of Yahweh and the king's house, and all the houses of Jerusalem, and every great house burned he with fire. Verse 10, and all the army of the Kastim that were with the captain of the guard broke down the walls of Jerusalem all around. Remember when King David, repaired the breaches in the walls? Well, they knocked all of that down. So there was no defense for the city after that, though. There was no wall protecting them. Verse 11, now the rest of the people that were left in the city and the defectors, 5307, that's literally to fall, those that fell to the Kastim, in other words, they defected, and that is an idiomatic usage of nafal. That went over, 5307, that's another usage of that, the defectors that went over to the king of Babel with the remnant of the multitude, did Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, carry into exile. Verse 12. But left the captain of the guard from the poor of the land to be vine dressers, 3755, and husbandmen, 3009. Those are those that took care of the land. Because they were going to own it and occupy it and have troops there, whatever. And they wanted local food to eat. So they were going to make them slaves and, yeah, you take care of the gardens, we'll give you a little bit of it to eat, but the rest of it's ours. You're captives, you're slaves. Verse 13, and the pillars of bronze that were in the house of Yahweh, and the bases and the bronze sea that was in the house of Yahweh, did the Kastim break in pieces and took away the bronze to Babel. Now, verse 13, you can reference part A, 1 Kings 7, 15 through 26, and 2 Chronicles 3, 15 through 17, and part B, 1 Kings 7, 23 through 26, and 2 Chronicles 4, 2 through 5. Those were those huge pillars of bronze and the sea and the bases that were all so big of pure bronze, they couldn't weigh them. Well, they looted all of this and broke them up, used iron axes and chopped them and broke them in pieces and destroyed all that artwork and took them away just for the value of the bronze, because they used bronze to make weapons and such and tools. So they got all that bronze. Verse 14, and you can reference 1 Kings 7, verse 45, and 2 Chronicles 4, verse 16. And the pots, shovels, snuffers, and dishes, and all the vessels of bronze with which they ministered, took they away. Because a lot of that stuff was made with gold, and the rest of it was made with bronze. Verse 15. Let me clear my throat again here. I've gone a little beyond, if I can get my mouse to work. Just a second. There we go. It's dry in here. My throat's dry and I cough and the weather's been very cold and snowy and just covered with snow out there and been down in the single digits here. So, verse 15, and the fire pans, bowls, and such things that were of gold, what was of gold, what was of silver, the captain of the guard took away. Verse 16, the two pillars, one sea, and the bases which had made Shlomo for the house of Yahweh, the bronze of all these vessels was without weight. In other words, it weighed so much it couldn't be measured. I mentioned that before. And here it states it in this chapter. Verse 17, the height of the one pillar was 18 cubits, and the capital upon it was bronze. And the height of the capital was 3 cubits, and the network and the pomegranates upon the capital all around, all of bronze, and like unto these had the second pillar with network. That was all described in the construction details back when Shlomo was building the temple. And it was beautiful and all handmade, specially. They had to cast it out in the clay of the plain because it was such a large casting that they couldn't cast it in a mold. They couldn't build a mold big enough to do it. Verse 18. And took the captain of the guard, Seraiah, 8304, the chief priest, and Zephaniahu, that's Zephaniah, 6846, the second priest, and the three guards of the doorway, in other words, the doorkeepers, and all the people, both small and great, in other words, rich and poor, anybody that was important or unimportant, and the officers of the armies rose up and came to Mitzrayim because they were afraid of the costume. So not only did they empty it out, a lot of the people fled to Egypt, which was in violation of Yahweh's laws. He said, don't go to Egypt. Verse 27, it came to be in the 37th year of the captivity of Jehoiakim, king of Yehuda, in the 12th month, on the 27th of the month, Ewil Merodach, not evil, Ewil. They changed the vav, the waw, the w into a vav. The Jews did that. That's number 192, and it's of Chaldean origin. And it means soldier of Merodach. Ewil Merodach, king of Babel, a new king. In the year that began he to reign, lifted up the head of Jehoiakim, king of Yehuda, from the house of confinement. In other words, he had compassion on him, and he lifted him up out of the prison. Verse 28, and spoke he kindly to him, and set his throne above the thrones of the kings that were with him in Babel. And that the reason of that is Babel had subjugated many nations and had their kings as captive. Well, Yehuda and the city of Jerusalem were the biggest capture and the hardest fighters, and they had respect for them. And that's why he set him over the others, because they were very important and much feared. Verse 29, and changed his garments of confinement, in other words, his prison clothes, and he ate food continually before him all the days of his life. He let him eat at the king's table. Verse 30, and his allowance, 737, was a continual 8548 allowance given him from the king, a daily rate for every day, all the days of his life. That's the end of the second book of Kings, chapter 25. That finishes it. Now, this ends the time of Yehuda of pure seed line in the land of Israel. There were some remaining, and they continued until the time of Yeshua Messiah. But the majority of residents were of alien bloodline because they moved them in to occupy that land, to work that land. And most of Israel and Yehuda went into dispersion. They were either aliens or mixed breed. Pure Israel of all 12 tribes, that's including Yehuda, eventually migrated into Europe. That's where we come from. And also to North America. The people of Yehuda, although few that returned from Babel to the former land of Israel, brought back the Babylonian Talmud, corrupted by the religions of the alien nations, and they had these priests that were not of the Aharonic seed line. They were mixed breed mongrel priests, and this religion created eventually what is now called Judaism. They no longer use the holy name of Yahweh, and indeed they suppress it. They don't recognize Yeshua as Messiah, and they continue to practice a paganistic influence religion today. And they have infested and infiltrated the Judeo-Christian churches and brought their Babylonianism, their Talmudism, into so-called Christianity, and they call it Judeo-Christianity. Well, there's no such thing as Judeo-Christianity. It's Talmudism. That's what it is. Let's call it what it is and quit fooling around with it. It is not scriptural Torah as taught by Moshe. It is not Mosaic Torah, which is what Yeshua taught, and why these Babylonish priests, these Talmudists, hated him so much, the ones that, because they were mixed blood, they were of mixed breed, and they could not stand the examination of what they were teaching by Yeshua Messiah. He showed them up at every turn and countered them with scripture, and they absolutely went ballistic. They couldn't stand it. And they hated him, and because they were Edomites in mixed bloods, they had mixed with all these pagans. And then later on, they had the Khazars out of Europe by Russia. They were all mixed. They had Hittite bloodline in them. And it just, you know, it has culminated in what we have today. Now I want to talk about Isaiah. We're going to be getting into that tomorrow on Wednesday with verses 1 and 2. There is a lot of margin notes and stuff Isaiah's Hebrew name is Yeshayahu, and it means, it's number 3470, it means salvation of Yah. Yesha, salvation. Yah is the epithet for Yahweh. That's number 3050. And he was the son of the prophet Amoz. Number 531. And this book that's coming up starting tomorrow has a lot of messianic prophecies. You should study this book with the New Testament side by side. Now, I'm going to read it as it is in the Hebrew, and the phrasing may seem odd at times, because they keep the Hebrew word order where it's possible and without confusing the reader or the student. But if I have to give the straight Hebrew to keep it in context, I will explain it to you because of the idioms and the figures of speech and the metaphors. Now, there's a lot of words that are not in the Hebrew that they have added, and they put them in italics and some other things and change the context. The ones that really change the context will be omitted. Those that are in there to anglicize it for clarity, I'll tell you when they're added. Because it says don't add to or take away scriptures. Now, I'm not going to say that it's in the scriptures. Not some of the things aren't in the Hebrew, but are added so you can connect, because it's very difficult to translate to English literally. A lot of things are implied, and I have to inform you of that. They're implied by other words because of the Hebrew language. It's not easy. A lot of words that if you take them literally are way off. But if they are used metaphorically or as figures of speech or idiomatically, you have to study that material to understand when they're being used in that manner. Well, I've done that for years. Hebrew is really a beast to learn. A lot of people just throw up their hands. Man, I can't make head nor tails of this. You kind of bite the bullet and just keep at it, because it'll drive you nuts. And I was already nuts, so now I'm more nuts. Crazy old man. I love the word. I do. There's so much revealed. And all of this stuff with the occurrences and the prophecies and the writings of the prophets and stuff, that's our history. This is where we come from, what happened in our past that have helped to shape us, into what we are today. Now, we have fallen away, a great many of us. Let me get a drink of water. And have not kept the teachings of Moshe. We're seeing that in the Judeo-Christian churches today, because they have been heavily influenced by the Talmudists. They have infiltrated their seminary schools, and they've been teaching this nonsense. And a lot of these guys that are teaching this stuff truly believe it. They think they're teaching the truth, because that's what they were taught. They're copycatting. Monkey see, monkey do. It's rote learning. They have been brainwashed into thinking that what they're telling their congregations are true. And they will fight you tooth and nail. And if you really confront them with the truth, they get extremely upset. The truth just flusters them terribly. And that's a problem that a lot of our people of Israel have today with the Christian identity message, which is straight gospel without all this gobbledygook that was added. And the deception has been removed, and these these guys before me that did all this studying that have helped me and Pastor Eli and myself and David James and Paul Mullett and all the guys that have pitched in to help at EFR. The focus of Eurofolk Radio is a scriptural focus. It is a Christian identity station. Oh, it was from its very inception. It was designed to be that. And we have other shows that give other information, news, etc., etc., and different points of view. So people will be informed. That's the whole purpose of the shows, is to inform you, whether it is of current secular events or biblical truths. And we do deep word studies, I do, and when Eli and I get together, we really dissect stuff for your benefit. So we've done a lot of the research and have books that perhaps you do not have or don't have access to or don't have the money to buy. We, both of us, have huge biblical libraries with reference material and all kinds of translations and concordances and language studies, and it's not easy. We put a lot of work into it. But we do it out of love. We care whether you hear what you need to hear. The Bible says, my people perish for a lack of knowledge. We're doing what we can to counteract that. Now, tomorrow is the 18th, and the inauguration is on the 20th, and we all are wondering what exactly is going to occur, and there's no way to really know until it happens. We can guess and we can hypothesize, oh, maybe this and maybe that, and this website says this and this website says that. You're not going to know until it happens. A lot of conjecture, a lot of theories, lot of prophesying by people that are just running their face. We don't know what's going to happen. We know we have two opposing forces that are going to meet, whether there is violent clash or not. We really just don't know. But I'm going to keep on with the word-for-word series all the way through this week and just keep on keeping on, regardless of what happens. Even if you're barricaded in your home, you can get on the internet and listen to the show. And I will do my sermon shows, Wake Up Call, on Thursdays. And I will comment on current events. As best I can from a biblical standpoint, what Scripture has to say about what's going on in the modern world. Because we need to keep a scriptural mindset. I strongly suggest that you have plenty of food and water. And if you are living in a large city and have to drive to work through areas that would be risky, I suggest you call in sick or take a very circuitous route. Just go around to get to work. If you have to drive a long way, it's better safe than sorry. I don't want you or your family to be injured and certainly not killed, because these people are violent. The ones that would be causing the trouble have a penchant for violent actions, especially against people of our race. They don't need any other provocation except the white skin. That is enough, and they will not be punished. Police will not arrest them. The police will not come to your aid. We have seen that. They will be ordered to stand down and let them do whatever they want. And they will. And if you're there and they have bricks, and they break out your windows and drag you out of the car, your life is in danger. You don't need that, your family doesn't need that, and we certainly don't need that. We don't want to see you injured in any manner, or your family. So be very, very, very careful on Friday the 20th, because it could get really ugly. Now, I'm not prophesying that it will. I'm not doing prophecy here. I'm saying use common sense and be safe. Because I care. I just, you know. We've seen what these beasts of the field do. They hate us. They are instigated and paid for by people like George Soros, the Jews. They're bussed in. They may be armed. We don't know. It's going to be unpleasant from the plans that they have announced. We don't know how far they will go, what countermeasures the police will take, whether they're going to bring in the National Guard. As I said, they're not releasing information we don't know. But we do know from past behavior what they're like. So this is just a word to the wise. You cannot do your family any good from the hospital, or if you're crippled or dead. Take care of yourself and your family, and pray without ceasing to Yahweh. Things will be what things will be on the 20th. And I'm sure EFR will have running commentary about what's going on. But I myself have prepared with food and lots of water, potable water. I even have enough that I could wash up with if I had to, if the water got shut down. We don't know. My little city doesn't look for any trouble. I live in a dinky little town. But the big cities, they get more press coverage there, and there's a lot more to destroy and burn, and more people to beat up, and they just love to get their faces on the camera. But we will see what we will see. We are in the time of Jacob's trouble. We understand this. This is a precursor to the full tribulation. When that will come about, we don't know. I think we've been provided with a little extra time here. And maybe some of the oppression will back off, and maybe not, because we don't know who is controlling Donald Trump. And we have the same, pretty much the same people in Congress. All the Republicans have a majority now. Back and forth and back and forth. And it's all smoke and mirrors, because the two parties are the same once they get elected. They say a lot of different stuff before the election to make you think that you have a choice. But after the election, They all seem to walk in lockstep. And the steps that they are stepping bode no good for the white race. Because a lot of these guys are white race traitors, and they hate their own people, and that be us. Those of the Adamic seed line. So there's an old Chinese curse that says, may you live in interesting times. Ooh. That's not good. You know, it's a little too interesting there. Like riots and all the biblical type things. Wars and rumors of wars and plagues and disasters and AIDS, stuff like that. But always remember, age cures fags. Sorry about that. Yahweh works in mysterious ways, you know? He surprises us at every turn. There's going to be a lot of stuff going on in Isaiah that carries over today. It pertains to what's happening now. A lot of prophecy in Isaiah. You know, that you get that when you're writing a book of the prophets. You know, prophets tend to prophesy. But after that, we really need to keep our eyes open. But I've got about 3 minutes here, or actually, eight minutes. I don't want to run on too long, but I just wanted to get that word, the final word of warning I'm going to give. I'm beating a dead horse after this, really. You need to go to Yahweh in prayer this week, ladies and gentlemen. Pray for Israel. Pray for your brothers and sisters. Pray for your family for protection. And it's okay to pray against the enemy, that he would be soundly defeated. We're watching the empire of finances of the Jews crumble. And when that happens and they no longer have a secure base and they're not in total control, they go into full panic mode, which is what they are doing right now. Be careful out there. They use the beast of the field against us as muscle. They always have done that. Protect yourself, protect your family, and always, always, always put Yahweh first. That's the main thing. I'll talk to you tomorrow on the 17th, and may Yahweh bless and keep you. Praise Yahweh.
Onward, Christian soldiers, marching as to war, with the cross of Jesus going on before. Christ the royal master leads against the foe. Forward into battle, see his banner go.
Live. left. Hip, two, three, four. Hip, two, three, four. Lift. If we're the team at EFR.
We're the team at EFR.
Make the most of what we are.
Make the most of what we are.
We love Yahweh, he's our king.
We love Yahweh, he's our king.
To his glory we now sing.
To his glory we now sing.
Hip, hip, two, three, four, hip. Hip, two, three, four.